Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Gospel Tangents is supported by users like you. Please support us at gospeltangents.com or on Patreon. It's the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology, and first daily Mormon history podcast. I'm Rick Bennett. February is Black History Month, and so we're going to be talking to Mally Bonner. He's the director of Green Flake, the movie, about a Black Mormon slave who entered the Salt Lake Valley perhaps before even Brigham Young. So we're going to talk a little bit about slavery in Utah, Indian and Black slavery, and we're going to talk about, that legacy. There are some buildings at BYU, the Abraham Smoot Building, and of course Brigham Young encouraged slavery to be adopted as a law here in Utah. And so we're going to get into some tough questions with Mally Bonner and see how he feels about those issues. So you definitely don't want to miss this conversation. Check it out. And I do wonder, it seems like Margaret Young said this, that New Mexico wanted to come into the Union as a free state, and California did as well. Brigham Young's looking at the calculations. Hey, well, if we come in as a slave state, we'll keep the balance of slavery, slave states to free states, and it'll be easier to get into the Union. Now, clearly, there was a polygamy problem.
Yeah, there's that.
But is that your understanding as well? Was this really just a political thing so that Utah could become a slave state to keep the balance of slavery?
I think that that's a part of it. If you ask me, there's a whole lot more into this. I feel like just like politics today, there's our politicians who are giving their speeches and running for office. And then there's the people who have the money who are pushing them to do whatever they need to do. You know, and so if you have people who are the money people behind making this successful, they have a huge influence on it. So if you can imagine, a lot of the saints coming through were poor, had hardly nothing. Everything, they barely had enough to make it into the valley. Then you have some of the southern converts that are doing just fine. They've sold everything they owned, which was a lot, back in the south. Their money's in their enslaved labor and their wagons and their seed and their furniture. And so they're coming in and in their tools and their everything. So now you get into Utah and you're telling me that I'm going to lose half of my wealth, then I'm going back. And if them going
you're
back.
You're talking about wealth, you're talking about slave wealth.
Yes, slave wealth. This is, in my mind, this is what's happening. So you have these families, these very prominent rich families who are going to threaten to go back because why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? So they'll go back, take their enslaved labor with them, all their wagons, all their seed, all their tools. How in the world are the saints going to survive? So I think that was also weighing in the balance, in my opinion.
So this brings up another tough subject. And when I say tough, one of the things I've found, it's so easy to talk about race issues with a Black person. It's a lot harder to talk about it with a white person.
Yeah. There's a lot more landmines. Like, okay, yeah.
We're not racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. But Abraham Smoot was one of these Southern slaveholders.
Yeah.
There's an administration building at BYU that's named after him.
Yeah.
He was a great leader mm-hmm. in the LDS church. You know, there was a few years ago, it seems like there was a question, especially with Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd murder and things like that.
Just woke us all up.
Yeah. And so should we rename both BYU, because Brigham Young put enough pressure that people passed it. And we do want to talk about Orson Pratt, too. But also the Abraham Smoot Building, because he owned a lot of slaves. What's your position on that?
So, gosh, that's so tough. You know, unfortunately for some, this is my position. If it's hurting people, if it's causing people harm to have to walk into a building that reminds them of abuse and all the worst things that come with slavery, because the worst things that happened in the South also did happen in Utah, mm-hmm. just not as prevalent. And it's a reminder of that, with no apology or excuse. Why would we do that to people and have to put them through that? Change the name. Abe's not here. He's okay. He's fine. He doesn't need his name on a building, but there's people here today that are really suffering because of it. And so for that reason alone, change the name. You know, these men are gone. They don't need some form of building and etched in stone. That's for us and our egos and whatever that is. We should be protecting the people that are here today. You have J. Marion Sims. He was the godfather of gynecology. And he worked on enslaved women, gave them no anesthesia. No anesthesia because back then it was common. They don't feel pain, you know, and they don't feel remorse. So you can take their baby from their womb. He was trying all these different things with the C-sections and having them hold each other down. It was terrible, terrible. And we would all agree. There was a monument of him in a Central Park in New York. What do we do now that we've learned what he did to do? Because yes, he changed gynecology, but off of the abuse of women, should there be a monument there? Of course not, because of the abuse he did to women. Because they're black women, does that then make it okay? What if they were white women? Do we keep it? Does that change it? You know, so for me, it doesn't matter all of what he changed when it came to the medical field. The harm and damage that he did is enough to say that is not going to have a monument there to re-traumatize people today, in my opinion.
Let's throw it the other way. You know, Martin Luther King, incredible civil rights leader. I remember talking with Larry Foster, and he said that he was crushed to find out that King had affairs.
Right.
A very unchristian thing to do.
Right.
Do we still celebrate King despite his foibles?
And so for me, it's so, in my opinion, harmful to compare slavery, murder, torture, rape to someone who was unfaithful. And we're putting them in the same bracket to make a point. And again, that says a lot about us. If we're putting that in the same bracket as murder and hanging people and torturing people and enslaving people, then what is wrong with us? There is no comparison. And so that would be my answer to that. So if you're saying, Martin did that. Wow, is that how you see slavery? Then maybe you should learn more about the history is what I would say to that person and say, mm-hmm. and see the gravity of that and see if you want to compare it to adultery or to cheating at this school or on this test, or is that what you're really going to compare it to?
Because some people are going to say, well, if you look at anybody has sins.
Yeah.
Let's just mm-hmm. call it that way. any great leader is going to have things that they did bad. So can anybody be celebrated? I mean, there's going to be people that are going to say that.
Yeah.
How would you respond to that?
Yeah, it's not about can they be celebrated. Like, I feel like even though Brigham Young, you know, led the debate in making Utah a slave territory, that does not change the fact for me that he was this incredible prophet that led the largest pioneer migration in American history across the country. Like, he's unreal. He's incredible. He also, you know, and so it's not either or. I do think that we can acknowledge someone's accomplishments and also their sins. I know I'm saying things that are just going to rock people's world, you know, and I know it's probably triggering to even have the conversation, but hopefully it can just be a conversation that we're having. And this can invite other people to have the conversation, because I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm still figuring it out. I just know that I don't feel good knowing that if A.O. Smoot did enslave people, why are we putting his name on it? When there's people today that are descendants, my great grandfather was enslaved. And so it's like, sorry, deal with it. Whoa, that's tough.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, since I just spent so much time triggering people in one way, you know, I want to take a moment to speak to the other side of the argument, because the other side has a strong argument. A.O. Smoot sacrificed just about everything he could sacrifice for this territory, for the people, and look at the fruits of the labor because of it. Like, so many, countless, it is countless, those who have benefited from Brigham Young and A.O. Smoot's relationship and what they said they're going to do to make this school the BYU. How can we tear that down? How can we take down what we're all benefiting from because of that being one part of their decision-making that they didn't even realize the magnitude of how wrong it was? And had they known, would they have done it? Had they known the gravity that we see, hindsight 100 and something years later? And so there is a strong argument there. And I'm not, if nothing is taken down and nothing has changed, I would be totally fine with that, because it's a strong argument. How can we? So even though when I speak on something, it feels so absolute, but I can equally feel just as strong on the other side.
It's my understanding that Abraham's grandson, Reed Smoot, who became a senator here in Utah, and of course there were the Reed Smoot hearings. He was picked because he wasn't a polygamist. But my understanding is he was actually pretty good with regards to civil rights. So you look at his grandfather who owned slaves, and now his grandson is kind of pro-civil rights.
Yeah,
so
I love that.
These things are messy.
Yeah, they are.
And it's a lot easier to tell the simple tales. Oh, he did one thing wrong. Let's cancel him, right?
Yeah.
Cancel culture.
Right.
So I like what you said, that we need to really get in and understand. We have Brigham Young, who's instituting slavery in Utah, but yet freeing a slave, Green Flake. What's going on?
Yeah. And that to me just leans to the politics of it all. Like, wow, was he really just being, did he believe what he was saying, or was he just giving great speeches as a politician? Mm-hmm. You know, because there's other letters where he's said that he would purchase someone and set them at liberty. Like, so you're saying there should be slavery, but you want to try to make sure it doesn't happen at the same time, you know, and that is not unique to Brigham Young.
In addition, Brigham Young had a policy to purchase Indian children, especially slaves. One of the things about the act in relation to service was blacks and Indians were treated differently. Indian children, once they hit about 20, were supposed to be freed, where that wasn't true for blacks.
Right.
But this policy of purchasing children, for Indian slaves, I guess you could argue, yes, this was graduated emancipation, gradual emancipation, but not as clearly for blacks. And so there is this real contradiction. We're going to purchase slaves, then we're going to free them. Is that a good thing? I think it is argued by experts in Indian slavery in Utah that by purchasing the slaves, they were creating a market for more slaves and perpetuating slavery.
Right.
And so was it a merciful thing? What do you think?
Yeah, it would be this my same answer to your initial question with, you know, A.O. Smoot on buildings. It's there's two arguments that I could argue equally, you know. On one hand, draw the line. We do not purchase someone, another human being, and enslave them. We're not engaging in it. And if that means that you're going to, we don't know what's going to happen to that child, that family, that is on you. And hope you do not commit sin. But what I'm not going to do is start sinning myself. You know, so there's no reason to ever purchase another human being and enslave them. That being said, what if they didn't? You know, was it worse for the, because you've heard stories like, well, if they were pressured into doing it, if they didn't do it, then what were they going to do to the children that they didn't purchase? Okay, then we'll take them. I've heard that story.
Well, yeah, there's a story about some Indians bringing some Indian slaves. Hey, we want to sell these to you. No, we're not going to purchase them. And they kill one of the kids right there in front of the settlers. And it's like, that's your fault. And then they're like, okay, we'll buy the others.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that story.
Yeah.
I've heard that story. And so it could go either way. There's an argument on both sides because you don't know what was in their minds at that time. You know, yeah. I have to say something. If we spent more time and if this was a roundtable discussion about what to do with naming buildings and with this troubled history, I would want to walk into a building that says A.O. Smoot that teaches me the history of A.O. Smoot and what he's done, what he's accomplished, the turns and choices that he made that were harmful. I want to walk into that building. It may not be the building where I have to go take class. I don't want to be forced to. In order to get the grade, I have to go in there. But there should be somewhere to learn about him, you know, and that could be the building for that. So I don't think
that... So like a museum.
That type of thing, you know? And so it... But one shouldn't be forced to go in order to get the degree, you know, if they feel traumatized by it, you know? So there's... That would be part of my argument.
Okay. Very interesting. Is there anything more with Green Flake that we need to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, this is the part that I wish was a part of more of the discussion is talking about the actual enslaved human being. What were they going through? Because we spend time talking about Brigham Young and other leaders and what they thought and what they said and what they did. But these black saints were at their disposal. And what was that like? How did he retain his faith? Because he stayed a member of the church, though being enslaved by another member, watching his friend Hark, because they were close, Hark Wales, be separated from his family. Hark Wales was sent to go into San Bernardino, but he now had a wife and a child because they had spent a couple of years in the valley before they went on to San Bernardino. And he wanted to go with his family. And the owner of Hark said, not unless you can pay, you know, to Brigham Young, because Brigham Young was suggesting to keep the families together. And the owner said, somebody going to pay me? Otherwise, Hark goes, she stays. And that's what happened. And that family was torn apart. And we don't know that they ever saw each other again after that. Mm-hmm. And so I want to highlight the emotional fortitude of these black saints who did incredible things. The similar hard things that the white saints did in addition to slavery, you know, and for Green Flake to speak at multiple Pioneer Day celebrations and alongside church leaders, what he must have meant to the community. They respected him and knew what he meant for him to be speaking with leadership and for him to endure that and have no signs of bitterness. And that is what I am trying to study about African Americans, because when there's a history of these hundreds of years of slavery and then they're freed, where is the bitterness and the revolt? The people come together and fight back and no, they just want their peace. The civil rights movement, and you think of Martin Luther King and you'd think that there was this big fight. No, peace. And I think there's a beauty in the African-American struggle here in America, and that's no different for those who are members of the church, and how they endured what they endured. How bad was it? We don't know. But we do know that there's no stories of this bitterness. Somehow they still found forgiveness and love, which I hope that I can attain one day. Green Flake, as he watched other black members die in unmarked graves, he carved his own gravestone, which is so special to me. So he was one of the young ones. He was 19, you know, so he watched people pass before him, and he chose to not have his family not be able to find him, or us not be able to know who he is. So to carve his gravestone, that's a beautiful piece of history. One thing you asked about was hearing new stories and things you hadn't heard before. And as I was doing this research, I came across a family in California. It was a lady in my stake whose kid was on a basketball team with another kid. And she mentioned Green Flake, and he was like, "Oh yeah, that's my great, great, great so-and-so."
Really?
Yeah. And it's just some kid, not a member of the church or anything. She connected me with the family, and they're like, "Yeah, that's our..." And they shared with me stories that I hadn't heard. Like,
oh, really?
That, yeah. Like on one of the trips back, Green Flake was coming in for a celebration, Pioneer Day celebration, and was bringing Lucinda. And they would pull over in the wagon, and he would just he would trick her with animals and scare her. And like just hearing the humanity, and even though that's like a little memory of something, it just lets us realize they were human beings and not just a topic that we're talking about.
Oh, wow. Was that part of your movie then?
It wasn't, no.
So you learned that too late.
Well, I learned it, but I was like, where does that
fit in?
Yeah. And how do I have the money to shoot it? Yeah. So all those things, yeah.
Oh, wow. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Mally Bonner, the director of Green Flake, the movie. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about the movie and the film festivals that Mally won as director of this amazing movie.
So I directed it, threw it into film festivals, and it came back winning best film in every film festival that we got in.
So best, yeah. LA, yeah. London.
Yeah, LA, London, Rome, Istanbul, Tampa. I mean, there were over 10, and then I turned my email notifications off because it was just a lot of stuff happening.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you to continue to enjoy Gospel Tangents. Consider becoming a Patreon or go to gospeltangents.com/shop, and you can get a cool tie, a hat, or even a nice mug. You can also get a sweatshirt, so check it out at gospeltangents.com/shop.